KBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and joining us on the Commons today, we have a lady who seems to do it all. I mean, we all think that we're pulled and pushed in a lot of different directions, but I don't think any of us wears as many hats as my guest today, Elaine Roberts-Musser. She is the executive director for Building Bridges, the Elder Abuse Program. She's chair of the Triad Task Force in Yolo County, and she's the Yolo County Commission on Aging and Adult Services. Is that enough? No, she's more. She's a volunteer attorney. She's senior legal hotline. She's Yolo County's legal clinic. I'm tired of just introducing you, Elaine. Thank you so much for finding time to join us.
Well, thank you for having me.
That's a lot that you do there.
Oh, it sure is. Keeps me busy.
Tell us a little bit. I mean, building bridges, one of the big problems that we hear about quite often is elder abuse in all different aspects of life. So it's nice to see that there is an elder abuse prevention program called Building Bridges. Would you tell us a little bit about it? You're the executive director.
Yeah, Building Bridges was an interesting idea. We saw a need to fill in the gap between the district attorney's office and, say, adult protective services, mental health services, some of these agencies that get out and see some of the problems that seniors are up against, especially when it comes to financial elder abuse. So what happens is they refer it to the DA's office. The DA's office will tell them it's a civil matter. The DA's offices generally have their hands full with gang problems, murders, rapes, things like that. So financial elder abuse is not high on their priority list. It can't be. They have only limited resources. So something had to be done, and that's how Building Bridges came about. It was sort of a germ of an idea that we really needed to get to seniors before the elder abuse happened, which is very difficult, and try and educate them so that they don't get themselves into trouble. However, we found that most of the times we arrive too late. The damage has already been done, but a lot of times we can step in and intervene and get their money back or somehow get them some redress. Not always, but we have a pretty good track record.
We do associations, and you do have a case, of association abuse here, and that's something that my listeners are very familiar with, so we will be getting to that in a little later on in the program. But what other kinds of abuses are we talking about here, Elaine?
Oh, they just run the gamut, I'll tell you. I had one lady that ended up losing her almost her entire life savings because of a risky investment. Right now I'm helping a lady get a full air conditioner was replaced. She had one of those home warranty services policies and had trouble getting the company to replace the unit even though it was 19 years old and broken. So that was very successful. The company worked very diligently with us, as did the DA's office and Adult Protective Services and a congressman and an assembly person. And all of that made a huge difference. It can be as little as a case having to do with someone complaining about $400 that they felt, was a mischarge on their internet bill, things like that. So it can run from very small to very large. I took a couple of cases involving Ponzi schemes. If any of you know anything about Ponzi schemes, it's where it's an investment scam. And what happens is oftentimes in a Ponzi scheme, you have situations where the senior, who now years later, after going to an investment seminar and investing a fair amount of money in some oil well in Oklahoma, finds out that this was a scam all along, and this is like 20 years later, and it comes back to bite them.
Oh, really?
They actually end up being investigated by the SEC or a bankruptcy, federal bankruptcy court, and they're asked to cough up as much as $25,000. And they call me and say, where am I going to get $25,000? So they panic. And actually, there are things that you can do to avoid that sort of thing if you don't have the money. So it just, you know, the cases are so different. Every case that comes to my door is different.
But you keep talking about getting the Attorney General involved and different agencies involved. How do you manage to do that?
Well,
giggle, says
she. Yes, right? Well, it's interesting because that's the difficulty to begin with. When you start a program like this, no one knows you. They don't know who you are, what you're trying to do. And you have to, it takes time to build that trust. And what you do is you start out, this Building Bridges is affiliated with our County Commission on Aging. That gives its own cachet, which is nice because what we did is we invited a lot of agencies around the table to tell them about this program. We did outreach. And the first place we went was Adult Protective Services because these are usually the people that see it first. Once Adult Protective Services got wind of us and started using us and saw that Building Bridges had a lot of successes, they in turn referred that information to the DA's office. So now the DA's office knows about us. Now the Contractor State License Board knows about us. You know,
so
Mental Health Services knows about us. And it goes from there. It builds. And you have to start by building that trust with the individual agencies. And once they know you're out there, once they know that you do have a fair success rate, then you get more cases than you can handle.
Okay, but they send you the cases. Do they give you any help?
Yes, they do. It's interesting. Because sometimes I had a case, for instance, of a gentleman who got involved in a Medicare Part D scam. And I was infuriated because I felt that this senior was extremely vulnerable. He was low income. I referred the matter back to Adult Protective Services, and they were able to help me. For instance, there was a period of time when he couldn't get his medications because he was dropped by the Medicare Part D, and the company that scammed him wouldn't pick him up either. So he was like in limbo for a couple of weeks. Well, this is a man who had Parkinson's disease. He couldn't go without his meds. So I referred the matter back to APS, and they are able to step in an emergency like that and get him the meds that he needs. So the agencies themselves are an integral part of the process. When I get stuck on something, I can then refer it back to these agencies, and so there's a relationship that is built up over time. Now, our program is relatively new. I've only been at it, a little over a year and a half. But in that year and a half, I've really done quite a bit in getting this up and going and gaining that trust and building the relationships, and it's really worked.
It sounds like it. It's nice to know that you're going to get, you're also managing to get some help from real government. We pay our taxes and they're supposed to be there to protect us, but they aren't always. You talked the other day when I talked to you, guys, she's got a terrific sense of humor. I called her late at night and I was running late and we ended up talking for what? Over an hour?
Right.
Laughing and giggling and, you know, really hit it off very, very well. So I'm excited to introduce you to my listeners. You also talk about a triad task force.
Yes.
What is that?
Well, triad task force was an idea that is certainly not original to me. I volunteer for an organization called Senior Legal Hotline, and we were invited to a seminar that was being given by the California Department of Corporations. They had invited someone, a district attorney called Paul Greenwood from San Diego, wonderful man. And he talked about the importance of organizations like Triad that try and meld law enforcement and seniors together to address criminal activity. Because he says the DA's office can't do it all. And oftentimes what happens is in a DA's office, unless the matter rises to a criminal level, and it's a pretty high threshold, you know, the elder has to be either have something physically taken from them or monetarily taken from them, and you have to be able to prove it, you have to be able to prove intent and all that stuff. Also, as far as it can also be elder abuse, as in physical abuse, where the senior is actually hit or neglected or whatever. But if it doesn't rise to the criminal level, the senior's left in limbo. And when they approach, say, the DA's office, the DA's office will say, well, this is not a criminal matter. We can't handle it. His office actually started the idea of an elder protection unit, and it also addresses civil issues. Not many DA's offices do that. So he came up and talked to us about Triad, where law enforcement and the seniors get together, and the police will come out and give talks about identity theft and how to make your home safer and all those sorts of nice things. So when I heard about it, I brought it back to our county on aging, and they liked the idea so much that we started one ourselves. It's called the Triad Task Force. It's a little bit different than what Paul was talking about. In our case, we decided to join not only law enforcement, but we have all kinds of people around the table, public guardian, adult protective services, Department of Employment and Social Services, mental health services, adult day health care. Anyone and everyone in the community who wants to join the effort is invited to the Triad Task Force. And we just work on projects. One of the projects that we've just completed is something called Rebuilding Together. I don't know if any of you are familiar, but it's a national organization. And they go in and they install wheelchair ramps, grab bars, things like that for the elderly who are low income. They also have a fee-for-service program. They also have a program for vets. So that's one project we did. Another project.
What's the agency called?
It's called Rebuilding Together.
And it's limited to the seniors.
Seniors and disabled and children of disabled. So it's pretty far-reaching. You just have to be disabled, essentially. And they put in wheelchair ramps, grab bars like in the showers or along the walls. They'll put railings, things like that.
And this is a national group?
Yep,
organization?
National organization. And if you don't have one in your area, you need to get one.
Okay. And it's a relatively new organization. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's been around for, I think, 10 or 12 years. It's a 501(c) nonprofit.
Okay.
And what you have to do is, the way we worked it is they're working out of Sacramento. I live in Davis. That's the next county over, Yolo County. And in Sacramento, they have it there. And we saw what they were doing and said, hey, you want to come over to Yolo and give us your expertise? And they said, yeah, if you're willing to raise the money.
Ah.
So that's what we do. We raise the money and they provide the expertise.
It sounds good, because so often there's nothing out there for these people.
That's right.
And all right, I wasn't going to get into it, but do you ever, you know, we've got to get into the HOA thing at some point. You know, one of the big things with HOAs is they really like to be all controlling.
Right.
And they come up with these rules that supposedly trump covenants, which, of course, they don't. And they don't like ramps, and they don't like handrails, and they don't like this, and they don't like that. How have you run into that with Rebuilding Together or with any of the groups and organizations that you work with? And how have you managed to overcome that?
Well, In our case, rebuilding together is very new, so we don't have a huge track record to know, but we have already hit some of it.
Oh, you have?
Yes, we have. It didn't involve a homeowners association, but it did involve an apartment owner who had a lady who basically was she was wheelchair bound and couldn't get out of her apartment. Basically, she was in there for good because there was no way to get out with the wheelchair.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's a pretty bad situation. So what I told Rebuilding Together and the mental health services who was working on the case is I said, I looked up the law, and the law says, according to the Americans with Disabilities Act, the landowner or the landlord does not have a choice here. He doesn't have to provide the wheelchair ramp, but he has to allow it.
Right.
And that's something that I think a lot of landlords don't necessarily know. So my suggestion, and we're still working on this, still fleshing it out, but my suggestion to the Rebuilding Together was, look, we know what the law is. Maybe it's time we go out and educate the landlords, the homeowners associations, or whatever, what their responsibilities are, which is not to impede a homeowner's ability to get these things so that their home is accessible for them. This is an important issue, and it's necessary, and particularly for seniors, because seniors oftentimes are disabled, physically disabled. So that's how we've started so far, and we have hit it, and I'm sure we will hit it again and again and again, and you just have to start educating them that they don't have a choice. They have to allow it.
That's something, I mean, I know it's the law, and I know that they have to allow it. They don't have to pay for it, as you pointed out. They do have to allow it. But it's so difficult. And with this, you know, with the graying of America, with more and more people who are becoming seniors and a little more disabled, they're not as agile and nimble as they once were. It's going to be a little more important to have all of these facilities and all of these things built in to make it accessible, because I mean, you got to be able to go home.
Right, right.
And the next thing is, of course, you know, associations have such tremendous powers, as you and I both know.
Right.
So you end up with a ramp that they've been forced into allowing, and then they start targeting them with all kinds of other abuses to get them out.
Right.
So you're not disagreeing with that.
No, I'm not.
Okay, have you? Yeah, well, we'll be, okay, we'll be talking about that. But right now we're talking to Elaine Roberts-Musser. She's the executive director of Building Bridges. She chairs the Triad Task Force. She's on the Yolo County Commission on Aging and Adult Services. She's a volunteer attorney, Senior Legal Hotline, and Yolo County Legal Clinic. And before we went on the air, I said, do you want me to say you're a volunteer attorney? And she says, oh, yeah, that's okay. So there you go. I'm not giving away any state secrets here, folks. Senior Legal Hotline, who mans that? Just you?
Well, Senior Legal Hotline is a part of Legal Services of Northern California, which is a nonprofit government agency that I don't know exactly how or where they get their funding, but they do. They have branches all over Northern California, and one of their projects is Senior Legal Hotline. Senior Legal Hotline is a wonderful organization. They have paralegals and attorneys, and they get on the phone 5 days a week, and they give legal advice over the telephone. It's very difficult, too, because now they're pulling back on funding agencies like this, which is very frustrating because it's so needed. I mean, they can't even keep up with all the casework they have, and they have to limit the advice they give just to brief telephone advice because there just isn't the time or the energy or the money or the funding to do anything more than that. So they have it rough.
So what's the answer?
Well, that's a good question. They're looking into, right now in California, they're considering forcing attorneys to start paying extra in their bar fees so that it will fund legal aid. That's one of the ideas that's being floated out there now. I know in the past they floated out the idea of possibly forcing attorneys to take so many pro bono cases a year. That didn't go over too well.
Not at the rate some of the attorneys charge, no.
So, you know, it's someone's got to do it because the problem is the low income particularly do not have access to the court system. I think the courts are doing a lot. I mean, they're trying to make their small claims courts accessible, and I think that's a great idea. But small claims courts, and we'll get into this in the Homeowners Association cases, but the small claims court is limited for someone like a senior who has, physical or mental problems. They're at a huge disadvantage in the small claims court system. Also, I think in California they're making a push to have certain things like probating wills and so forth done in such a way that the average consumer can do it themselves. They don't necessarily have to hire an attorney. California is pretty progressive that way, and they're trying more and more of these things. Now, it's a slow go. In fact, right now we're trying to get a transfer on death deed, and we're just having terrible time getting it passed. It's just, there's just certain groups that don't want it, namely the probate and estate planning attorneys don't want it. But it's really needed because there's an awful lot of seniors who are house rich, cash poor, and they would like to have something like a simple trust that they could set up without, they don't really have the money to go to an attorney. So that kind of a deed, transfer on death deed, would be great. So I'm hoping that the legislature sees the light. But California is pushing for these kinds of reforms, so I think that's one big area that we need to look at, is to make the justice system more accessible to the average person off the street.
Have we complicated life unnecessarily over the years? It seems to me every time I turn around, we have all these unnecessary bells and whistles and hoops to jump through and bureaucratic red tape to cut through. Could we just make it simpler and just say, okay, guys, let's go back to simpler times. We don't need all of this.
Yeah, I think to a certain extent that your comment is justified, because I do think in certain areas, for instance, if you do something as simple as, say, sign an apartment lease, if you take a look at the lease, it is so complicated and so full of small print,
right, legalese,
et cetera, and the average person isn't going to read it. And in fact, you'll get a kick out of this. I do the clinic work, and I had two little ladies come to me one night, and they both had trusts, and they were about 5 inches thick in these fancy binders.
Geez.
And they had come to me because they wanted to make a minor change. And I said, well, we really don't do that. The only thing we can advise you in changing is, say, property, if you want to add or delete property, because usually in most trusts there's something in there that allows you to do that. But when you start to change beneficiaries, you have to be very, very careful how that affects the rest of the trust. So typically we don't do that kind of a change or amendment. So we're sitting there telling them this, and they said, well, we've never read this. We really don't know what it says, but we just wanted it changed. And I'm going, oh, my God.
5 inches thick, right? We haven't read it.
So they basically got a trust, and they never read it and have no idea what's in it.
But now they want to change it.
Yeah. And they completely trusted a lawyer to do the right thing.
Oh,
and
God.
Yeah. It was Well, it was funny, but it wasn't.
Yeah. You're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and today we're talking to Elaine Roberts-Musser, and Elaine is a little bit of everything. She's Executive Director of Building Bridges. She's the Chair of the Triad Task Force, the Yolo County Commission on Aging and Adult Services, Volunteer Attorney, Senior Legal Hotline, Yolo County Legal Clinic, and an On the Commons guest. Thank you so much for joining us today, Elaine.
Good to be here.
You sent me an email and you said that you had this 78-year-old widow who was having problems with her association. And I called you eventually and we talked for a while, and sounds like a typical nightmare, typical HOA nightmare. You want to tell us a little bit about the case?
Yeah, I really contacted you in desperation, frankly, because I was just at my wit's end. I've contacted so many different people trying to get help for this case, and I haven't been able to really get a handle on it. And I did not realize the horrific nature and power that these homeowners associations wield until I got into this case. What's going on basically is I have a 78-year-old widow with multiple health problems. We're talking, you know, heart failure, diabetes, you name it, she's got it. And she's living in a condominium complex of about 60 homes. And they have a homeowners association, which is pretty typical. And about a year and a half ago, or a couple years ago now, they decided to hire a manager, which was a big mistake.
I think all my listeners would probably agree with you on that
one. Yeah, they do. Well, this manager, one of his first priorities was to ingratiate himself with the board of directors, and he's a younger man, looks a lot like a football player, built like a football player, and I think he's wowing all the ladies. I think that's part of this scenario.
Yeah.
But anyway, he's a bully. That's, to put it bluntly, he's a bully. And the first thing he decided to do was to make collecting assessments a top priority. He also, interestingly enough, does not live in this county. He lives fairly far away. He lives about an hour, 45-minute drive away. And suddenly, all this cosmetic improvement is being made in the condominium. And, of course, the money's got to come from somewhere for these cosmetic improvements. Well, he hires companies that are way far away, near where he lives, and they come all the way out to do all these cosmetic improvements. And what's happening is the Homeowners Association is having to pay exorbitant amounts of money for these cosmetic improvements to the point where they went into deficit. Well, once you go into deficit, you got to, the money's got to come from somewhere. So they got assessed about $150 one-time special assessment. Well, of course, that hits, you know, low-income seniors or families with young children, that's a lot of money to them. But that wasn't the worst. That was definitely not the worst. That's sort of a culmination of a lot of different things. They've instituted a court system, a little mini court system.
A kangaroo court.
You've got it. Right on.
A kangaroo court, yeah.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
What the board does is the board president goes around and she keeps an eye on everything. So in other words, she's a busybody. And she looks over fences, she listens in on conversations, whatever she has to do. Then she reports that back to the manager, and before you know it, the homeowner is called to a hearing. And in that hearing, they're accused of all sorts of things. And in fact, I was at one hearing where the poor homeowner was chastised because he was up on the roof repairing his air conditioning unit and accused of being a peeping Tom.
Jeez. And where in the covenants, pray tell, does it say you cannot go on your roof?
Nowhere.
So, but, you know, where's their authority to fine him for that?
There is none. There is none.
I know.
And so he ended up being charged $200.
Because he was on his roof.
Yeah.
Fixing his air conditioning.
Yes. And cool. he promised he'd never do it again.
So he's going to suffer in the heat.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's what's going on. In my opinion, I mean, you can only guess at these things and their motives, but basically I think they're using their ability to assess or levy fines or whatever as a source of income. And they're doing it with complete impunity. They're doing it against the law. The Homeowners Association law here in California requires that if you have any kind of a hearing, it has to be fair and reasonable, and then it sets out the rules for what's fair and reasonable. That's not what this kangaroo court is. Just unreal. You have to go before not only this manager, but all the board of directors, and you have to essentially profess your sins. It's almost like going to confession.
See, I guess this is what I was thinking of when, during the first part of the show, I asked you if we had not unnecessarily complicated life. I mean, to set up this kind of nonsense it's just inviting abuse.
Right.
It's hideous.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. I didn't know. Of course, you are much, much more familiar with this area of the law than I am. And I know this because I came to you for advice, and you gave me a lot of really, really good insight. I was shocked. I sat through several of these hearings, and I was just appalled. I couldn't believe what was going on. And the homeowner would be just, well, in fact, the night I went with my client, she was forced into this one of these hearings. And she sat there, and this woman, she's this little old lady, 78 years old, multiple health problems, could hardly make it to the pool house where they held the meeting. And they're just, you know, ripping her apart, just going after her. And it's like, what are you doing? What could you be thinking of? How could you even, you know, from an ethical point of view, just from a purely neighborly point of view, how could you do this to a neighbor?
You know, I'm going to interrupt you here, and I'm going to give everybody some advice. Don't go into these meetings without some kind of a recording device. You know, you can get digital recorders, you can get digital video recorders, record them, record these meetings, and put them up on a website, YouTube. You know, there's so many tools that are available. You cannot fight this sort of thing in the dark.
Right.
You know, you just can't do it. Everybody says, oh, well, you know, you agree to it, and it's an isolated incident. You know, let's put all these isolated incidents up on the web. You know, we'll be doing isolated incident number 3,234,000, you know, and on we
right.
go. But do it. I mean, that's that's my advice.
No, I think it's very good advice, because you are really, first of all, in California, when I said that the hearings have to be fair and reasonable, that what it says is, you're supposed to meet and confer with one board member. You're supposed to be offered possible mediation as an alternative. And it's at the convenience of the homeowner and the one board member. In other words, it's a mutually convenient time and place.
So you don't have to meet with the whole board then?
No. And that's the thing. I mean, if you think about it, you've got seven board members sitting there, plus management, all in this tiny little pool room, and it's just you against seven.
I always advise people, make them, if you're going to be going in with an entire panel, whether it's the entire board and management, sometimes legal will be there, make sure that it's open, and I don't care. Go drag people off the street and bring them in there, because, as you point out, there's an imbalance. You've got all of these people on one side of the table and the homeowner sitting there alone.
Right.
And it's intimidating. It's scary. You've got the whole world against you. But when you're sitting on the other side of the table and you're facing an angry mob, or you're facing a mob, you don't, frankly, don't know what side they're on or what they're thinking. But once you've got a huge audience, that tips the scale away, the power away from them, and makes them feel more intimidated.
Well, and I have to interrupt here, because let me tell you what happened.
Yeah,
because I agree with you, and I tried it, and that's just to show you how much power they wield. My client was asked for a hearing about some trivial little thing, which was ridiculous. So I told her, you stay home, I'll go in your place, because I'm your attorney, I'm technically representing you. However, I had in the past asked for production of documents, and this same manager told me to come alone. Well, I wasn't about to come alone. So I requested copies of documents, and he so far hasn't given me any. So what I did was I decided, okay, two can play this game. So I wrote up a very formal letter, which, by the way, he was refusing my letters. I'd send him certified mail return receipt, and he'd refuse them. So I wrote a letter up and had the last sheet was an acknowledgement to say that this letter was being hand-delivered. I brought my son with me, who's, 28 years old, can protect me,
uh-huh.
Walked into the pool house and had my son sign the paper to say that he saw me hand deliver this letter to the management, and that was going to be and so I answered the charge and requested more documents. As we were standing there, and as my son was signing the paper just to say that he was acknowledging that I had hand delivered it, the management says, Are you a homeowner, sir? You shouldn't be here. Are you a homeowner, sir? And he just kept saying that, and I turned to him and I said, excuse me, he won't be there that long. Don't worry about it. And then I finished, and then I plopped the letters down in front of him, and I said, you've now officially been served. Have a nice day. We walked out. And I'm still waiting for a reply.
You have to do that. To do that. And take a recorder with you. I'm big on recorders. I think it's great to just have these little things. They make them small. They make them convenient. You just put them in your pocket and turn them on, and you're good to go.
Oh, I think that is really a good suggestion.
And then that way you can't, they can't say, well, I didn't really say that.
Right.
It's right here. Shall we listen to it?
Right.
I've done that before. Well, I didn't say that. Okay, here we go. Let's turn it on.
Right.
I guess that really wasn't you talking, right?
Well, shall we do a voice analysis?
I read, you sent me, it was a fairly long email, and I read the whole thing and made a ton of notes here, so we're going to hit some of the notes. You said that your client was inappropriately fined for repairs that were done to, there was a smell of smoke and somebody contacted a contractor, and it was to the common area, and then your client was inappropriately fined for those repairs, even though they were corrections to the common area.
Right.
One of the things you could do is check the governing documents to see if there's a requirement for a uniform rate of assessment. Then they'd be in violation of their own governing documents. In the older ones, they put that in. I don't know if they've done that now.
Explain a little bit to me about a uniform rate of assessment.
If you look in the governing documents, the CCNRs,
mm-hmm.
the covenants, the declaration,
right.
Quite often it'll say there's a unit, they talk about how you're going to be assessed and what you're going to be assessed. And quite often, especially in the older governing documents, there's a requirement for a uniform rate of assessment.
Mm.
And so if you've got that requirement for a uniform rate of assessment, they cannot be assessing different people different things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know.
That's just one of the little bitty notes that, you know, we were giggling so much the other night that I never got to tell you that. There are a bunch of different things. Oh, you were talking about the subcontractor who hires people to come from far away, and then I guess there's mileage included in all
right.
of that, and they're more expensive. There was a case in Virginia some years ago, and I attended the trial, and it turned out that the manager was out of state, and the management company also owned a number of other companies, boiler, you know, HVAC repairs, plumbing companies and carpentry companies and all
oh.
of that, all under different names.
Oh.
So he would hire himself, and a lot of the work was done by him himself. He would hire himself, charge an exorbitant fee to drive from Maryland into Virginia.
Yeah.
And then he would take care of the stuff. And then he'd go home, but he was the manager, so he was there anyway.
Yeah.
Or he'd have his son or his nephew, or, you know.
Right.
So sometimes, you know, there's a lot of self-dealing that goes on. You know, it may be kickbacks. It may be, you know, Cousin Luigi who owns it, and Cousin Luigi owes you money, and this is one way of getting him to pay you back.
Right, right. I agree. Because when I went to the, one of the companies that's hired was not licensed. And in California, that's illegal. I don't know if that, I would assume it probably isn't. Every other state too. I assume every state has its own licensing system. So in California, if you do $500 more of work, then you have to have a license. Well, this company that they hired doesn't have a contractor's license. So I'm looking into that angle. But the interesting thing is the company that they had before to do the lawn service, it was only $14,000 a year, but when they hired this one, it's up to like $24,000 or $21,000, it might be $21,000, something like that, but it's a significant increase. And this company has to come all the way from some long distance, all the way over to do the lawn of this particular homeowners association, where I'm sure a local company would do it for a lot cheaper.
Yeah, I'm sure they would, and I'd be curious as to who owns the lawn company.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We're talking to Elaine Roberts-Musser. She's an attorney in California, and she's representing a 78-year-old woman. One of the things that you said in your email, Elaine, that just, I mean, I've heard a lot of things, as you might imagine.
Yeah.
But one of the things you told me, which I thought was just really something I hadn't heard before, is how the board president goes eavesdropping on people.
Oh, yeah. This is hard to believe.
You know, I tend to imagine things in cartoons. I can just see this woman hiding in bushes with a glass up there, you know. What are you talking about? Oh, you mentioned the budget. We need to fine you for that.
It is. It's really bad because what she does, yeah, she literally wanders around the development and just listens. This is a condominium, so they're like townhouses, what she would probably call townhouses.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody's patio is enclosed by a high fence. And so people tend to meet on their patios, right? And it's all enclosed. She literally goes up to the fence and listens to hear what people are saying. If you say anything against the board or management, then you are hauled into a hearing and fined. And one guy was fined $200 because they didn't like what he said.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not.
$200.
I mean, it's unbelievable. I just couldn't believe it.
And what was it he said? Do you know?
Well, there's been a lot of controversy. Apparently what's going on is the management and the board of directors want to amend all the governing documents because they want to change them so that they can increase assessments without homeowner permission and they can borrow money without homeowner permission. So if she hears anything that she doesn't like, then that's what she does. And what they've done is they had an election and they did pass the amended bylaws, but they didn't get the CC&Rs passed, the amended CC&Rs. So now she's basically holding the vote open for months until she gets what she wants. And she's going around twisting people's arms and threatening them and doing all sorts of things in order to make sure that she gets those CC&Rs passed. She only has four more votes to go.
Wow.
Yeah.
Out of 60. What's the requirement, do you know?
What do you mean? What's the requirement?
To amend the... Some of them have a supermajority, like 75%.
Yeah, I think if I'm not mistaken, they have to... it might be 60% or it might be two-thirds. I think it's 60% in order to amend the CC&Rs, and they can't get it.
That's not a very high majority. I think it ought to be 100%.
Because I'll agree with that.
I really think it ought to be 100%. And if you get 99.9%, then it's not a valid. You know, you can't force someone to give up a part of the contract that allegedly. I mean, if you want to keep harping on the contract nonsense.
Yeah, I think that's a good point because if you think about it, when they bought the home, they bought it with the understanding that the CC&Rs that were put in front of them, those would be the CC&Rs that they would have.
I mean, you can't say we're not going to do that. One of the things you said, the people consistently being singled out. Mm-hmm. For these are minorities in the low income.
Right.
And so you get into, you know, the seniors, the people they don't want. It's sort of neighborhood cleansing, ethnic cleansing.
Right.
They don't like the elderly. They don't like the minorities. They don't like the low income. They don't like these people. So although we make it against the law to discriminate against them, then we give these bullies all the ammunition they need to terrorize them and move them out of the association or move them out of their homes.
That's right. That's right. And in the case of seniors, it's particularly egregious because many seniors, and my senior that's my client is one of these, they get reverse mortgages. And so, you know, they're heavily mortgaged. And so if they were to sell out, where are they going to go? They've mortgaged so much of their equity in their home that they can't get a replacement. There's nowhere for them to go.
Well, what these people have been given is the power to foreclose in a lot of states. It's to foreclose non-judicially. So when you have seniors who typically have mortgage-free homes and they own them, you know, free and clear, all of a sudden you have some little tyrant who comes in like these people over here and they just take their homes away, they lose everything.
Right.
You talked about being cash poor and house rich. You know, if all their money is tied up in their house, it can be gone. If that house is in an association, they can lose it all.
That's right. That's right. And that's the part I didn't realize. And that's, I find that shocking. And if that's the case, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not for homeowners associations at all. If they have the power to foreclose like that, that just isn't right.
They do. I mean, they've been given the statutory power in a lot of states, I mean, probably in virtually every state. And the industry will argue that if you don't have teeth, if you can't scare these people into thinking they're going to lose their homes, they won't pay up. They won't abide by the rules. They won't do what they're supposed to do.
Mm.
And so, you know, on the one hand, they say everybody's happy, happy, happy. And on the other hand, they say, oh, but you need these teeth. Well, why do you need the teeth if everybody's happy, happy? Oh, well, you know, you might have somebody who decides they don't want to pay their assessment. Mm. So do you really need these powers?
No.
I like you, Elaine.
No, I just, I think one of the things that bothers me a lot is what's happening now to my client is that the management is upping the regular assessment as much as is allowed statutorily, which is 20% a year. That means that the $250 a month that they're paying right now will be doubled in 5 years. Well, if you have a senior on a limited fixed income, they can't afford that. And then if they can't afford to pay these huge assessments because other homeowners are wealthier and don't mind paying for all these little cosmetic improvements, that puts the senior out of their home. Because again, as you said, as you pointed out, the homeowners association has the right to foreclose. So my client is going to end up without a home because the homeowners association decided that they wanted little retaining walls and little flower beds and da 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 da.
So it's not just paying the utility bills anymore,
no.
Is it?
No. No. And I'm sorry, I don't think a person should be kicked out of their house because they don't want to plant 500 camellias around the... and I'm not... That is not a joke. That's one of the things that they did.
Planted camellias. Elaine, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, it was a pleasure.
It's always fun talking to you. You've got a great sense of humor, and I like the way you think. thank you for all you do for the seniors. We're all headed in that direction. So it's nice to know there are people like you out there who will help. I think it's desperately needed, and I think it needs to be expanded to just about every homeowner, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, I agree.
But
thank you for all you do, because I tell you, this idea of the homeowners associations and what the power that they wield is going to become a bigger and bigger issue as time goes on. So for you to be out there, you know, sort of telling everyone about it, warning about them, giving ideas on how to fight back, that's going to be invaluable.
Well, as you know, I think the legislative arena and the legal arena are of limited use. I think that the people have got to stop laying down and taking it. And there's
right.
So many ways you can do it. Maybe we'll start focusing on that one of these days. But Elaine, thank you again. Really appreciate it. To all of you for joining us today. If you want to send us an email, the email address is onthecommons@cox.net. On the Commons was produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. We'll see you all next week.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall.
Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.